Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, David Von Strong and Clinton Johnston. And now, here's Clinton. Here's Clinton, because David's not here right now. He is going to be joining us later. He had to pay homage to the god of day jobs. And, of course, we are without our wonderful, wonderful other co-host, Leslie M. Scott Jones. She is still out doing things with her day job, which leads me, of course, to yet another open letter to the day job. Open letter to the day job. Oh, day job, we so grateful for how you allow us to pay our bills, and or at least pay some of our bills, and buy our groceries, or at least buy some of our groceries, and do the things that we need to do, and provide us with the financial basis for the art that we do. Unfortunately, it'd be really great if you could provide us with a little more time and a little more basis for the art that we do, because, of course, that's what keeps things going along. I'm not going to go any farther than that and say anything that might insult you, day job, like calling you a soul-killing, exploitative weasel. I wouldn't do that. I certainly wouldn't. So I'll just say thank you for what you've done and done to us, and give us our David back as soon as you can. Okay, there we go. Let's head over to our first guest. Coming back to the show, one of our favorite guests, Deborah McLeod, from the Chroma Projects Art Laboratory. How are you doing, Deborah?
I'm doing very well, Clinton.
It is nice to have you on the show again.
It's wonderful to be with you.
Good. So, how are things over at Chroma?
Well, we're going along. As always, I have a beautiful show, Michelle Galliano. It's called Landmarks, and it's based on her project. She had discovered a book by Robert McFarland of the same name. He's from the British Isles, and he had discovered that there were so many words in our vocabulary that have since fallen out of use, become archaic, based on things that we used to know as an agrarian society, words that told us about weather conditions, land conditions, fishing and hunting, and things that when we really had to provide our daily bread ourselves and not have one of those soul-killing mm-hmm. jobs. So she's done paintings that are based on these words, and they're very beautiful, very reflective, meditative. It sort of takes you into a different time. They're abstract, but nonetheless
really
beautiful.
It's really interesting because I think it says something about our culture that we spend, or at least I feel like I have many more options to ponder on the words that are being created, mm-hmm. the words that are being added to the language. Because mm-hmm. and we spend time on that ourselves because we get stuff in the popular media saying, well, these are the new words that the such-and-such dictionary have just added in, and so-and-so is now a word from Urban Dictionary. We don't really think about the words that have passed away and that are no longer
yes.
that are no longer really of use. That makes a lot of sense, especially makes a lot of sense when you're thinking about words that are connected with an agrarian society. How did she run across such a thing?
I really don't know how she found it, but after she found it and read it, she shared it with a friend of hers, Stuart Gunter, who's a poet, and he wrote poems also based on the concept.
I know
Stuart
Gunter.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Well, you should come see the show.
I should come see the show.
But what? Just to use one word that's wonderful, the word eit, E-I-T,
uh-huh.
and it was a technique for fishing, where on a full moon, the fishermen would gather up white quartz rocks, stones that had little, you know, sparkling facets to them,
mm-hmm.
and put them in a stream bed. And on the full moon, it would shine, they would glisten in the water, and it would attract salmon. And then they could have a really wonderful harvest of salmon through doing that.
Holy smokes!
Isn't that lovely?
That is. I mean, not for the salmon, but... Hello, Charlottesville!
Slightly different tone.
Hi, how you doing?
David!
How are you?
It is I, David Von Strawn, a.k.a. The Devious One, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. What's going on, y'all? Sorry, I didn't mean to startle you. I know you were having just a nice, relaxing
We were having a nice, relaxing, urbane, cultured conversation.
And then I come in.
And then you come in.
100 miles an hour,
if
like
you're
always.
Black Frodo, does that make me Black Samwise? Or less than Black Samwise? Sort of Blackish Samwise? Just tell me I'm not Sauron.
No, you're not Sauron. I was taking you more for a Gimli.
Oh, thank you.
No. Just in that, kind of like, you know, matter of fact pragmatism.
Oh, okay.
That you carry.
I'll take that.
You know, you're a warrior, dude.
There you go.
I see that.
I thought it was just because of how much I drink.
That too. And you're an excellent actor, the same way John Rhys Davis is. #sliders. Bring it back. Please.
Right. Anyway,
so anyway.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Deborah McLeod of the Chroma Parts Project. We were just talking about this. So where's Chroma located these days? Because you just had to move, right?
Yeah, I moved about 4 months ago. So I'm in York Place right now, in Suite 9. York Place is 112 West Main Street.
And how's the space? Because York Place itself, it's a pleasant... It's a pleasant little mini walking mall.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's bright and beautiful and tall ceilings and white walls, and that's all you need for a gallery.
And you have ample access to pizza and and bowl food for your lunches.
Right.
Nobody told me about pizza. That pizza would be there. No.
It's actually dumplings.
Hey, I'm down with whatever.
Yeah.
Any type of New York food that is...
That
I can hold in my hand.
Have I betrayed myself? Is my mall geography that ancient? Is it off? Isn't Christian's down at York Place?
No, it's near.
No, it's a block
it's
up.
It's near.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
No, Grit.
Yeah, I know my Christians.
I see.
Grit's there.
And in Pat Taps. Yeah.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently it's been way too long since I've strolled through York Place.
Yes, you better come. Especially since you know Stuart Gunter.
Especially since I know Stuart Gunter. So you've got something coming up specifically concerning the river.
I do.
Why didn't you talk about that?
Okay. Yes, I have FLO, the Rivanna River Art Festival, coming up this coming Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a celebration of the river, of nature, of incorporating art, all kinds of art, visual art, installation art, painting, performance, dance, music, all along the banks of the Rivanna River on both sides. On the Albemarle County side, I have the, starting at Dardentale Park, I have the mostly the installation art, performance, and dance. Then over on the river, the city side of the river, starting at Riverview Park, I have the plein air painters all along the river capturing views of the...
So how are you going to display all of that artwork? I mean, because there's no walls at the river. I mean,
no.
Is it like bring your own easel? Like, is that how y'all are doing it?
For the plein air part, yes. Everybody brings their French easel and they paint there. And it's interesting because some people will be capturing the same view on their painting, but... People can see how differently.
Oh wait, so it's not like you're going to be presenting art that's already done. They're going
to
be sitting
it's
there.
They're
going to
be doing art.
It's doing art.
Oh. That's even doper.
Doing art. Yeah. So that's on the city side. Then on the Albemarle County side, it's installation. So people are, for instance, Renee Balfour. Is doing
so? Is that a piece of vocabulary that I thought I knew that I didn't?
What
is does an art installation mean? Something that is active and taking place, as opposed to an art exhibit, where something that is already set and on display.
Mm-hmm. It's more appropriately, it's a site specific installation. So, and that means, and Renee Balfour is a good example. The Rivanna master naturalists are going to be gathering some of the invasive vines, the kudzu particularly, that grows all along the river and chokes out the trees.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pull it down, and then they're going to supply it to Renee as material to build her sculpture
Whoa.
With. And then she's going to build a sculpture with the vines. It's kind of a bower, and then it goes down, and it goes down the riverbank, and then it actually moves. It flows with the currents in the river.
Oh, whoa.
Made out of these vines, yeah. And she's
Can
doing...
we have people gather up the big box stores that are spreading around and choking off the local businesses and give them to Renee and have her sculpt something out of them?
You can give those to Nineberg instead. She's going to be doing an installation on litter that she finds along the river.
That's so awesome. That's awesome. So is that
Deborah. Well turned.
Is that like something that she does? Like she just picks a certain, a tangible medium rather than like paint or like a pencil? Like she uses kind of what's given
there.
To her?
Mm-hmm. In both cases, it's actually available on site. The vines were available thanks to nature, and the litter is available thanks to humans.
Yeah, I was going to say, medium by nature, but litter, I guess it would be medium by society.
Right.
An awful, awful, selfish, inconsiderate society.
So what other pieces are going up? Or what other installations?
We have a bottle tree grove. Bottle trees were actually, they originated in the Congo, and it was a spiritual thing to create. In those days, in that place, they didn't have bottles. They used clay vessels, but they would affix them to trees upside down. And so, they felt that evil spirits roamed around at night, and they would go up into these, get captured up in these vessels. And then when the sun came out, it would heat the vessels up, and it would cook the evil spirits and kill them. So this came across to America.
I love the wonderful mix of superstition and ingenuity.
I know.
Yeah.
When the slaves were brought to America, they continued this tradition, and it also was the Creole people continued it too, and they were starting to use bottles then. So these are bottle trees, and I actually have been going around to all the bars collecting bottles for this. So I'm going to have people put the bottles on the trees and whisper into the neck of the bottle an evil that they would like to have cooked away. And then put it on the tree and let the sun do away with it.
Nice.
So that's nice. One thing. Another thing is Jum Jirapan. She is from Thailand. She's came here not terribly long ago, I think about 6 or 7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And she's doing, she's a Buddhist, and she's doing prayer flags, but she's also using a technique that she uses for her painting, which is Suminagashi painting, which is a Japanese technique that people may be familiar with because it was on the inside of books. Old books had, you know, that kind of marbly, really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
yeah.
is actually a Suminagashi technique.
Oh, huh.
And it, you do it by, and she's going to get vats of river water in containers, and you float a pigment on top of the water. And it's really a printmaking technique. So then you kind of move the pigments around, and then you take a piece of fabric or paper and lay it on that pattern and pull it up, and you've made a beautiful flag. And she wants people to think about, as they make these flags, she wants them to think about kindness and goodness in the world, and to make a prayer out of the out of the flag that they're making. Am I not doing...
No. You're just fine.
It's just an adjustment.
Yeah, and then she's going to string them up like a Buddhist, you know, a prayer flag, a Tibetan prayer flag.
So, are all the installations? Do all the installations involve some connection with the river?
They all do.
With bringing the river into the art installation.
Mm-hmm. They
that
do.
Is fast. So is and this is so this is your first one.
Yes, here it is. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you've done this before?
I did it once on a smaller scale, Alma James. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what led you to, and when was the smaller James version?
That was about 20 years ago.
And what led you to do this? What was your inspiration to come up with this type of a multiple inspiration, river connected presentation.
Because if I may, it sounds like there's a certain spirituality that's connected to it, and it sounds like all of the art techniques that you're implementing in this installation or in these installations include some type of spiritual connection with the river and with the people that are creating the art. It's not just somebody transferring a thought or a statement onto a medium. It seems like something that's more personal and more introspective that's being transferred into the artwork.
That's exactly right. Another thing that I did about, 9 years or so, was I got a grant from the Maryland State Arts Council to do a film on river baptism. I love the idea of the river being a source of cleansing and purification and inspiration. I love that idea. I feel really, connected to that idea. And I want everyone who isn't already thinking that way to kind of be aware of and care for our rivers. We're very casual
Absolutely.
About caring for our rivers.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking to myself right now as we were talking about how, one, how central rivers are to towns, because so many towns grow up around rivers. So many towns, rivers in so many places necessitate, or at least are essential for towns, for human settlements. And yet, as our towns grow from these little small hamlets that they were in the 17th or 18th centuries to where they are now, we've sort of swallowed up our rivers. I mean,
That's
I was just
right.
thinking that I have really very little contact with the Rivanna or consciousness of the Rivanna throughout my days and weeks. And it's in here, and it's a major river throughout town.
Yes.
It is. And it's been serving people for many years. And that's why actually a lot of our businesses, our industrial sorts of businesses, have kind of have their back turned to the river and their front towards the highways. So, you know, if you go down the river, you do see just big industrial kind of mess on the city side, particularly because that's where, you know, it all started, because the river was once a river, a waterway to get, it was deeper once upon a time, and barges came up the river bringing goods. And so that was Main Street, but then streets came along and we got in our cars and stopped thinking about the river.
Mm-hmm. And there are also a lot of the trails and the waterways that I usually visit when I'm, you know, on these hikes or whatever, they're by a train.
That's right.
Yeah, that kind of ruins my serenity. I'm just like, and then this huge train goes by. So
I know. We have to learn to tune that stuff out, because that's actually the same case with the High Line in New York. Have you visited the High Line?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have to just, not notice the ambulances and the taxi cabs honking.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just concentrate on, and nature is quieter and quieter as those things get louder and louder.
Yeah, that's when I was big on meditation, and it's definitely a challenge being able to tune everything out in the middle of Manhattan, in the middle of the High Line. All right, we're going to pay some bills. We're going to be right back with Devin McLeod.
McLeod.
like the clouds in the sky, like the rivers in the sea. This is Homegrown. Drop! It is 20 minutes past the hour, and if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Devious, that's Clinton. With us is Deborah McLeod, director of Chroma Projects Arts Laboratory. She is talking about Flow, the Rivanna River Renaissance Festival, going down September 30th, an amazing, amazing group of art installations, not exhibits, installations which we've just previously discussed, where they'll actively be doing art at the river, whereas you would just go to a place and see art being done at a place. This sounds like a really cool idea. We were just talking about inspirations as to building this project and making it come to be. What was the... You said you already did this before at the James. What's the brainstorming process for a type of project like this? When do you just like come up with it yourself, and do you just like approach people about it, or do you just sit with a group of people and they say like, "Oh, I can do this," or "I can do this," or "I can do this"? How does that come about?
It's kind of a mixture of all of those things.
Okay.
It starts with a suggestion of an idea, and you put it out in front of people that you know already know that they have a kind of like-minded feeling about nature, or you know it through their art, the way mm-hmm. that they approach their art.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started there. And it's not just installation art, too. It's also dancers and musicians.
Cool.
So, yeah. So I'm sure you know Terry Allard. She's going to be playing.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. And Michael Clem, I see his poster here. He's going
to
play.
Oh, yeah, Michael.
Uh-huh. I feel like I know him, but I don't know him. You know what I'm saying? But I've seen him, and I've heard about him in various things.
He was on the show. He was on the show before you were on the show. We need to have him back.
So yeah. It was BD before David. but I hear he's super awesome. Uh-huh. So
and Robert Jospe.
Okay.
And Gina Sobel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
So, and then Catherine Birdsall's dance group is dancing, and Megapo's dance group is dancing. So May Louis is dancing on a solo dance on the sand and in the river. Then Megan Hillary, I bet you know Megan. Do you know Megan?
Yeah, I know Megan.
Yeah. So she's addressing the history aspect of the Rivanna, because it was named after, it was the River Anne, and it was named after Queen Anne. So she's doing a series of skits based on Queen Anne.
Okay. You know, I was just talking to her about this,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I was just talking to her about this. Deborah, how long have you been working on this?
I started in April, I think.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
You were able to pull all of these people together.
Yeah.
In that time?
Well, you know, love is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Oh my God. It just sounds like a complete it sounds like it's super fun, but it sounds like a completely like arduous journey of collaboration and just you know, logistics, just trying to figure out where you're going to do all of these things in certain aspects of the river. Did you like visit the river and it's like, okay, we're going to go here, we're going to do this,
many,
we're going to do that.
Many, many times.
And did you have to negotiate with the city? Is the river public space? I don't know how.
Well, the city and the county are partners in this. In fact, I haven't said this yet, but Dan Mahan, who is the head of the Rivanna Trails system for Albemarle County, has been really an important actor in this. He's an amazing guy and an artist himself, and so he was very he and I started this conversation because I've known him for like 30 years since from Norfolk, and he was talking to me about how he had always wanted to have art on the river. So I embarked on this, you know, with the strength of that commitment that he has. And then Chris Jensik on the other side, he came into it later after we were starting to form this thing. And another thing I haven't mentioned too is Flotilla, the spontaneous boat parade. And that is going
the other thing that you haven't mentioned is Flotilla, the spontaneous boat parade.
Yes, that that actually initiates the event. People should start to gather about 9:30, bring their boats, their whatever watercraft they have, decorate it mm-hmm. in a funny way, and then it launches from Darden Town. It sort of begins the event. So
holy mm-hmm. smokes.
And how many boats are incorporated in the parade?
Well, we don't know. It's spontaneous.
Ah, I see.
Deborah, you've got a poem that she wanted to read.
I do want to read this.
Let's end this by doing that.
Okay. So this poem, I came upon it on the internet, and I absolutely love it. It seems so applicable. It's by a man by the name of, by a poet by the name of Pranav Jeet Singh Tanwar. You are the city by my side. I am the flowing river. I have come to you stepping down from mountains. I have to mingle in a huge sea, even more huge than you. At times, I was tied by dams. Bridges were built over me. Still, I came to reach to you. You are the city by my side. I am the flowing river. To ensure my flow, I kept my banks apart, and they could never meet. Oh, hard-hearted river, understand our love kept crying my banks. I thought of nothing of me or my banks, but of everybody else, no matter how harsh the times got. I kept flowing. I kept on flowing. So now, you please, don't ask me to stop for you. You are the city by my side. I am the flowing river.
Deborah McLeod, Chroma Art Projects Laboratory, thank you very much for coming back on Homegrown. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Clinton.
Thank you so much. I'm going to try my best to make it out.
I hope you can.
Yeah, holy
it
smokes.
Amazing. It really does.
27 minutes past the hour. David, let's talk about what's coming up art-wise.
Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. Now through November 26th, the American Shakespeare Center's summer fall season, featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry VI, Part 3, by Shakespeare, and the modern musical Peter and the Starcatcher, all at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. And now through January 16th, the Kluge Roo Aboriginal Arts Collection presents an off-site exhibition, Defending the Ocean, 21 works by contemporary indigenous artists, creating the central importance of the ocean to human life at the Charles L. Brown Science and Engineering in UV Hayes, Clark Hall. Last day, the very last day. Get your tickets because we were sold out yesterday. I don't want to hear no BS. August Wilson's Jitney at the Jefferson School. African American skin. I've been saying this like 800 times in my life. African American Heritage Center. Get them right now. And you're going to be sorry. You're going to be sorry because everybody's talking about it. Last day, also, the Best of Barbersville, a 45th anniversary musical review on the main stage at Four County Players. September 30th, the Charlottesville Writer House participates with over 500 similar events in more than 100 countries. It's 100,000 Poets for Change. Bring poems or music, yours or others, that inspire you to be the change you wish to see. To register, call 434-960-3272. I got juicy mouth today. I got a lot of juice in my mouth.
Juicy.
It's super weird.
Some juice.
September 30th, Australian Aboriginal artists Raymond Bulambula and Joyce Naliyabu come to the Kluge Roo Aboriginal Art Collection for an artist talk at 10 a.m., followed by a guided tour of the museum. Usually I read through this stuff, but today I didn't have the time. Also on September 30th, the Laugh Yo Blank Off Comedy Open Mic, hosted by Chris Allen, returns to the Southern Cafe and Music Hall, so get your laugh on. Chris Allen's the... He's that dude. He's the jam. And for
I don't think we have to say blank. I think we can say
we can
ass.
Say ass. We can
I
say ass.
Can say
laugh
ass.
Your ass off. Laugh it off. Laugh them pounds
if,
away.
If we can't, then FCC Chairman Ajit Pai can kiss my ass.
Well, I've slipped up many a times on the show before, so I'm just trying to keep it smooth. And for your music options this week, today, one guitar, one violin, two great performers. It's Duo Bohem, giving you a gypsy jazz brunch at Brasserie Saison at 12:30 p.m. Also today, Sue Harlow delivers Americana folk at Stinson Vineyards at 2 p.m. Americana. Another little Pino.
Americana. Ameripino.
Also today, oh, we got a lot of stuff today. Cat and the Travelers play Glasshouse Winery at 3:30. And also today, Help Me Helen at James River Brewery at 4 p.m. So that sounds like an amazing wine bar crawl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, get your music. Just hop on from winery to winery and do your winery to brewery, rather. Wine before beer, never fear. Beer before wine, feeling fine. Tonight, King Gold and Banshee at the King Whistle Irish Pub. September 26th is Bob Huntington and then Travis Elliott at Fellini's. September 28th, Scott Ward at Tavern on the James. Also on September 28th, Alex Caton giving you old-time music at the market at Grelin. Graylin. Also, September 28th, the Weed Eaters at the Whiskey Jar and Nick and Steve Pollock at Dirty Nelly's. September 29th is jam freaking packed. MRC Open House and the return of Live at 5, a showcase of the MRC's teen talent at the Music Resource Center.
Live at 5!
Live at 5! Isabel Bailey at Wegmans Pub, Delta Junction at Blue Mountain Brewery Company, Mojo Pie at White Wolf Brewery, and Rugged Arts Hip Hop Showcase at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. Also on September 29th is DJ Too Low at Tavern at the James. Spinning Pop and EDM at Rapture. Holy God, the 29th. And the September 30th is also jam-packed. Bobblehead performs Hillside Blues at Batesville Market, Kiz Carter at Dirty Nelly's, Cherry Red at the Whiskey Jar. Every Friday morning, West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Tuesday, traditional Irish sessions at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, look at this. Open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery.
Boom.
Open mic night at Holly Deli's and pub hosted by Josh Mayo.
Boom.
Jazz Collective number 9 at Vellini's number 9.
Boom.
Machado Fusion at the Ante Room presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club.
Boom.
And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And every Thursday. John Dirt Quintet at Miller's. This is your music for this week at Charlottesville. Holy God, you guys have a lot of work to do. And speaking of work, I have a lot of work to do. Hashtag screw capitalism. Clinton, I love you.
You're not going to leave now, are you?
No, I do have a question to ask.
I do have to ask
Sharon Harrigan of Playing With Dynamite, a memoir. She wrote this awesome memoir. It says you're out today, but you're here.
I'm here. Hi.
What a surprise. What's a twist? No, but I had one question to ask you about this, and I'm sorry to, like, just jump right in. First of all, how are you?
Good.
Excellent book. I thought it was excellent stuff. Clinton took it out on my...
I didn't. Those are yours.
Oh, I was, no, but what was funny is that I also use, like, use sugar packets as bookmarks.
Well,
because I'm classy.
That's sweet.
That's sweet.
That's so classy.
Gotcha. It's Splenda, actually. I don't use Splenda, but I just use them as bookmarks. But I was noticing that you use a lot of masculine metaphors and imagery. You talk a lot about baseball and cartoons and a lot of
condoms.
Yes, yes, things of the like, and a lot of like, a lot of, you know, masculine ways to describe things that wouldn't necessarily be attributed to a woman. Talk about that. And where that comes from, because I know it's a lot of it's about your father.
Yeah. So,
I
didn't know if you wanted me to read a little excerpt at some point.
I did. But David jumped right in.
I'm jumping right in because I got to jump right out. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I mean, my father to me was always mythic. He died when I was 7, and so he became larger than life, and one of the large things was his masculinity. When I thought of him, I thought of guns, and I thought of hunting, and I thought of power, and I thought of hiking in the woods in northern Michigan with him. And for every step he took, I trying to catch up, had to take 10. And so to me, it was just this kind of absent power, and that became it connected to all kinds of imagery for me, animals and... also, he was a welder, so he had this, to me, it was like a stick of fire that he used to melt metal, and make cars in Motor City. And so all those things felt very powerful to me, and I kind of longed for them and felt this lack. Mm. My family was then led by a single mom who was young and trying to figure out how to raise 3 little kids. And so it was very appealing, I think, to think of these, someone having the kind of strength to rescue us.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's really touching, and I have to go, but I was reading this book, and Clinton gives me things to like read and peruse for the guests that come on the show, and I'm like, yeah, I got to do my homework, but I just really ended up being like encapsulated in it. It was really very, very touching and very Like you mentioned it, you seem to idolize this figure.
How it starts.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
I said, I didn't finish it, but I'm going to finish it. I got to get out of here. Clinton, I love you. I'll see you in a few.
Thank you so much
oh, great.
For being
thank
part
you
of
so,
the show. Hopefully
so
you'll come back
reading.
When you write your
thanks
next book. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
All right, bye.
Dave Von Strong snatched away by the day job. All right. Hey, so we have Sharon Harrigan sitting here. Would you like to let's go and try to recapture what we were talking about before? Would you like to read? So you have just put out this memoir, Playing with Dynamite. Would you like to read the first bit of it to
sure? Just to say that it's not out yet. Its pub date is October 1st.
Oh, I thought today was the pub date.
So I'm going to be in Michigan giving a reading for it on October 1st. Can you hear me? So this is actually the first time that I'm reading from it in public. So
oh,
that's
great.
Super exciting for me.
Homegrown exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. You got the scoop.
We love getting scoops here.
So.
We're scooptastic.
Yeah. But also, like, if I mess up, it's because
we love messing up here. We are mess up tastic.
And it's live, right?
Oh yeah.
It's live. Okay. I thought I would just read a little bit because it gives you the setup, and then I don't have to explain it.
Yeah.
So, the setup is that I have all these questions, like, how did my father die? How did he blow off his hand with dynamite? Why did he blow off his hand with dynamite? So I give the reader the questions at the beginning, and then I say, I go off on this quest, this 2.5-year quest, to find out the answers. And then you have to read the book to get all the answers. So I'm not going to give it all away. I'm skipping around a little bit just because I don't want to go on too long. But I'll start at the beginning, after the prologue, the beginning of chapter one.
Okay.
My father took my 6-year-old sister on a trip to kill a deer. And the deer killed him. They were still winding their way up north, driving the 4-hour trip from suburban Detroit to the country. In the pre-dawn fog, a buck ran into the middle of the road. The soft-top Jeep crashed, turned upside down, and crushed my father. My sister survived, and my mother was left to care for 3 small, bewildered children on her own. My brother was 9, I was 7. My father was 32, my mother 29. The year was 1974. This is our family story. We tell ourselves stories in order to live, Joan Didion famously said. I've wrapped myself up in this story's shelter, the comfort of its familiarity, which after many repetitions starts to feel the same as its truth. I was home asleep, but I'd always imagined that night this way. Like all Michigan Novembers, this one's cold. No snow, though, not yet, at least downstate. Likely my father will encounter flakes and flurries as his Jeep climbs up the middle of the mitten-shaped state, so he packs snow boots, ski masks, and a parka for my little sister Lynn, her own tiny mittens clipped to the sleeves. He'll help her build the biggest snowman south of the Yukon before this trip is done, an abominable snowman, so she'll need an extra pair of mittens, too, for that. Midge, he yells, and my mother flies out of the house like a hound heeding a command. Get me some waterproof ones, he says, and she does, her long blonde hair slapping against her cheek. I can't, she stammers and stops. What, woman, you can't finish a sentence? This fog, she says, batting the thick mist away with her tiny hands. I can see fine, he says, his tone implying X-ray vision. Soon she skitters back in, her thin skin shivering. Before he packs his little girl, he packs his gear, orange vests and stocking caps, a rifle in the front, coffee in a thermos near his feet, some clothes and food. Excalibur, the beagle we call X for short, jumps in the trunk, wagging his tail, slobbering on my father's only hand that loads sacks of apples and sugar beets for deer. Then X whinnies and wiggles, his body saying, these road trips, these hunting treks are what he lives for. My father has grown a beard as red as his hair to insulate him from the elements. Truth is, though, no chill can penetrate him. If a bee stung, he wouldn't feel it. Frostbite, he'd bite right back. His Levi's, marked with welding sparks, are all about work, like his tan suede boots. His psychedelic trucker cap is something else. Even though he exhales frost, sweat forms on his brow after he heaves bullets and belts to ride next to the dog. His right sleeve hangs hollow, flapping in the wind. He loads my sister Lynn in back and tucks her in a green wool army surplus blanket, lays her down across the bench seat, fluffs her pillow, tells her, go on, go to sleep. She sticks her thumb in her mouth only after he's no longer looking. They drive up Fort Street, turn left at Southfield Road, passing dark alleys, empty lots, and graffitied storefronts, White Castle, Sam's Beer Store, an A&W root beer stand. Then my father tips his knees to steer the wheel, his left hand clutching coffee, to merge on I-75 North, speed limit 55. He's going 70, at least. My father drives and drives as the radio plays his favorite artists, Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan, Marty Robbins. The fog thickens. My sister sleeps and sleeps. The dog, too. The engine hum, the perfect white noise. The road slicks as the temperature drops. Each mile north they drive. My father quickens his pace up to 80 now, maybe more. Hardly another car on the road. The sooner they arrive, the sooner he can sleep himself. Then, hours in, it happens. A great big buck, the biggest buck in the Midwest, or maybe the world, bigger than a truck, in my childish imagination, runs across the road, materializing from the mist. The Jeep hits its heavy flesh, skids, topples over, and crushes my father. His head is smashed, blood gushes out his eyes. He cracks like an egg. That's the story I tell myself about my father's death. And I was going to read more, but I think I'll stop there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. So, thank you.
Oh, thanks for listening.
Oh, yeah, no problem. No problem at all. So, full disclosure, I haven't finished it.
I wasn't going to give away the ending anyway.
That's good. That's good. That's good. So, how long have you been writing memoir?
Well, I call myself an accidental memoirist because early in my life, I was a poet, and then I decided to become a fiction writer, and I got an MFA in fiction, and I never meant to write memoir, but I started writing a blog, and what do you write about on a blog, unless you're an expert in something, which I'm not, so I write about my life, and a blog post, that I wrote right after my daughter turned 8. I started with my father never got to see me turn 8. And I hadn't written anything about my father before. I hadn't talked about my father before. But somehow that story of knowing that he didn't see me turn 8 made him reappear. And my brother responded to that blog post. I turned his memories and mine into an essay. The essay grew into this book. It kind of snowballed.
Revenge of the Prey, right?
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that...
But that was a long time ago, because it took me a long time to write this book. So that was back in 2011.
Wow. So how do you find memoirship? How do you find memoir writing? How is that...
You mean Well, now I read a lot of memoir. I think that there's something about true stories that we can connect with. I read a lot of fiction too, but knowing that it's true, it's an extra layer.
Just adjusting.
And I teach memoir now too. I teach at Writer House. And I think there are a lot of people who want to write memoir because I think that everybody's got a story. My story of my father is, I think he's kind of an extreme example, but I think that we all have these stories about our parents that we could, you know, write a book about. So I love teaching memoir, and I really love the form. And it has a lot in common with fiction, because you set up scenes, and you put in sensory description, and you build characters. And it also has a lot in common with poetry, too, because a lot of poetry is in the first person, right? It's about it's about the author, even if it doesn't have to be true the way memoir does, it often is. And so I kind of feel like with memoir that it merges all the kinds of writing that I've been doing in my life and been interested in doing. And a lot of I think a lot of memoirists start either as poets or as fiction writers. I think a lot of people are afraid to write memoir at first, so they start out by cloaking their stories either in poetry or in fiction. Mm-hmm. And I did that too. I started telling the story about my father as a novel, and it didn't work because there was something. There were too many questions, and I didn't have the answers to, and so it didn't go deep enough. And so I had to tell the truth to really, I think, make the story to make it seem true, to make it alive. And there's a reason people shy away from writing memoir. It's because mm-hmm. it exposes you and exposes the people in your life. It's
so
easier to hide behind a mask of fiction or poetry.
Yeah, so I want to get to that. We need to take a quick break for station identification, but then I want to come right back to that. That's exactly right. Hold on. 48 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. And if you're just joining us, we're here with Sharon Harrigan talking about her new memoir, her upcoming memoir, Playing with Dynamite. So the reason I wanted to ask what you thought of memoir and how you felt about memoir is because
it's scary.
But you talking about coming at it from a poet background and also a fiction writer background makes more sense, because I haven't had a lot of experience reading memoir, and I had expected something a lot more stylistically straightforward, lot more of just a basic recounting. Like, I hear memoirs and I think of like old retired generals saying,
right.
"Well, back in 45, the Nazis were coming over and..."
Yeah, my book is a little bit different than that.
Yeah, and so I was surprised and pleasantly surprised how many literary devices there were in it, and how handily they were done. How much you were telling a true story, but at the same time playing so much with imagery and playing with associations.
Thank you.
And there's almost sometimes it's not quite, I don't know how to describe it, because it's not quite a dreamlike quality either. But there are moments where you would start to tell a story, or start to tell an anecdote about something, and then all of a sudden, right in front of me, it would seem like it had started as a tangent, but it would turn around and come right back to the main story and the central themes. Like one of the examples you were talking about when you were teaching your son, mm-hmm. how to drive,
yeah,
and what it was like driving in Virginia. And the difference between when you were in New York, when you didn't have to drive, and now being here in Charlottesville and driving at night, and when deer jump out, and all of a sudden, bam, we're right back to the story with your father. And it's just, oh, like there were moments, so many moments like that where it was so pleasant.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think memoir as a forum can be so many things, and that's it's at a really exciting point now, I think, because people tend to think maybe celebrity memoirs, or they think politicians who tell their whole life stories, but there's so many things you can do with a memoir now. I mean, you can just so many forms. I just saw Fun Home last night at the Richmond Triangle Theaters. Fun Home is one of my favorite memoirs. It's a graphic novel by Alison Bechdel.
Yeah.
And so you can do it that way. There's The Glass Castle, which is just turned into a movie.
They've done a theatrical adaptation of Fun Home.
It's a musical, and it's amazing.
Oh my goodness!
Exactly. So, so when I read Fun Home, and I thought, oh, if somebody can do that, then memoir is just this really flexible form. It's like clay. You can just mold it into anything you want. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that's the same about them all these is that they're telling a true story. But besides that, the form you pick, you know, whether you like, I want to, my form is kind of, I have the Homer's Odyssey was my container that I kind of right. thought of that I'm going on this quest, just like Telemachus went on the quest to find Odysseus. But I'm also kind of Odysseus himself trying to find his way home. It takes him 20 years after the Trojan War. And so I really liked taking these literary tropes and then using them, filling in my own story. And I liked using these magic, you know, mythical images about how deer had been depicted in the Middle Ages and things like that. I really felt like the form was so flexible that I could put in, I could be lyrical if I wanted. I could make, you know, scenes. I could even imagine scenes as long as I was clear that what I'm imagining right. and what I'm remembering. You have to, this is nonfiction after all. You want mm-hmm. it, you don't want to make stuff up.
But having, I think there was so much power in having the scenes, in having those scenes where you said, this is what I imagine mm-hmm. having happen, having fictional scenes, because part of what you deal with or what you start sifting through with this memoir is the question of the accuracy of memory and you talked about stories. I mean, something that comes through so strongly in this is the importance of the stories that we tell ourselves,
right.
the importance of the stories that we have forgotten, the importance of the stories that we rediscover, or the stories that we share with mm-hmm. other people, or the stories that we don't share. And of
yeah.
course, memoir turns out to be a really, maybe not the, if not the perfect medium to
right.
look at those ambiguities of memory and things, but if not the perfect medium, a really ideal
yeah,
medium
it's
for a,
that's
doing
some,
that.
Yeah, that's something that yeah, fiction tends to just say this is the story. When my brother read the manuscript, he was one of the first ones in my family to read it. He said, "Oh, it's about the unreliability of memory. It's about how we all have different memories, including my brother and me."
Right.
And I said, yeah, that is, I mean, it's one thing it's that it's about. And I think now maybe other memoirists have a better memory than I do, but my experience was really one that it showed me that there are so many holes in our memories. And when you start asking different people to tell you about the same things, I think we've all had this experience, right?
Now, how much did you tweak things, because may I say, like things like I mean tweak in terms of factually, like things like having your dog having your childhood dog named Excalibur.
Oh, that's true. I couldn't make that up.
Like, but that's so that was so perfect. Not
yeah.
just that he was named Excalibur, but because that, you know, that really gives the image of your father as this heroic type figure, but at the same time, and also, but also it's this really problematic image because your father only had one hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's the Excalibur is a sword that you can't quite grab because you don't have one
mm-hmm.
hand. And the fact that he's, but that, also the fact that you call him, that you guys called him X.
Yeah.
You know, and because you pretty soon have an ex-father or a
yeah.
not-father, and so much about what's going on is what's not there. It's
mm-hmm.
like it was just too perfect. It was just too perfect.
Yeah, I love that you're like reading all these things into it, because the symbolism, I think, is all there. And that's part of what makes memoir powerful, is like if it's a novel, you think, oh, it was clever, she made up those names. But it's actually in life, it's more amazing that these metaphors exist all the time.
Right. So so I wrote a play years and years and years ago and used a lot of anecdotes from my life. And when it was done, I was surprised at how... I accidentally fell into it, and when it was done, I was surprised at how much I put of myself
mm-hmm.
On the stage, and how exposed I felt. And you talked about that briefly. What type of courage does that day, or how much fear do you have to overcome?
Yeah, well, the title, Playing with Dynamite, is about this literal thing that happened, which is my father lost his right hand, his dominant hand, when he was a teenager playing with dynamite. But it's also a metaphor, and it's a metaphor about my playing with dynamite, me, the writer, that asking people, trying to find these stories, trying to uncover secrets, is dangerous. It's it's risky, both to me, kind of, it's emotionally fraught, but to how it affects others. And so I always thought of my father as a risk taker, driving 100 miles an hour with only his knees. But in the end, I was trying to say, to find our commonalities, and that was the biggest one I found, is like, no, I'm a risk taker too. And you know what the biggest risk I took was? Writing this book.
Yeah.
And so it was actually the process of writing the book that made me feel like I'd found him. I'd found our emotional connection, that we were both these risk takers.
Oh, wow. Great. Well, I certainly want to thank you for having taken this risk. Playing with Dynamite, when does it come out and how?
October 1st. I'm going to be giving a reading at New Dominion Bookshop on the Downtown Mall on October 12th. I love New Dominion. Big plug for New Dominion. Next weekend, for my pub date, I'll be in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, where I'm from, and my mom will be in the audience. That my husband and daughter, the characters in my book will be in my audience, except for my father, which will be interesting. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we look forward to having you back again.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, 58 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this has been Homegrown, another episode of Homegrown, your show about local art. A little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit everywhere as we try to make it through. Indeed, 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 indeed. I'd like to thank our guests, Deborah McLeod from the Chroma Projects Art Laboratory, and also Sharon Harrigan. Sharon Harrigan, who you just heard. Check out her upcoming memoir, Playing with Dynamite. It's really, really fabulous. Stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call. Your host is going to be Rick Moore, and he will be talking to people. Oh, where is he talking to? David has left this all in. Oh, here we go. Rick Moore, he's going to be talking to Dr. Lewis Weber and Dr. George Enfield in a previously recorded version of the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. They're going to be talking about depression in adults and children, say previously recorded. So if you feel the need to call in, please do, but don't expect anyone to answer. There you go. Thank you so much. This has been Homegrown. We'll see you next week. Hopefully, it won't be as chaotic. But it probably will. It probably will be.
And when she left me, you know I hung my head and I cried. And when she...
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.